Welcome to Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana basketball news and discussion, brought to you by the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Join me live at assemblycall.com every Thursday night and immediately following every IU game for our live IU postgame show. And visit insidethehall.com for complete coverage of IU basketball and to join the discussion in the Inside the Hall premium forum.
Welcome back, everybody, to this week's episode of Podcast on the Brink. And this is a guest that I've wanted to have back for quite some time, somebody that I've respected and known for quite a while. Was an IU graduate, now a reporter covering the Indiana Pacers and the Fieldhouse Files, I believe, is the name of the podcast where you can catch him. Scott Agnes, proud IU graduate, graduate of North Central. He'll never let you not know that on
the
on
cradle Twitter. Of greatness, Alex. You know that.
There you go, Scott. Welcome back to the podcast. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Doing well. It's a weird time for us in media. I think more than anybody else right now can attest to that. As we were talking a little bit before I hit record, you know, you had the unfortunate news last month that, you know, the Athletic was letting go of 46 folks, I believe it was. And now you're faced with, you know, trying to figure out what the next move is. What, and I know it's a difficult question, but, you know, what's the last month been like for you and kind of what are you looking at as potential next steps for your career?
Yeah. First of all, appreciate you having me on. I always enjoy seeing you guys. I mean, I think the last time we were quote unquote together was here at the Fieldhouse. We weren't together, but I was in the stands in row two when everything went down. But yeah, it's been bizarre. Maybe is the best word. I mean, obviously everyone keeps repeating the unprecedented times. Well, that's of course what it is. But then on top of that, yeah, when you lose your beat, you lose your job, your full-time paying job. And part of you thinks, hey, it's never going to happen to you. But the reality is there's what now 40 some million people out there right now unemployed, and probably the majority of them because of COVID and the current climate and businesses not being open. So it was a stunner. Honestly, we got an email, I mean, early one morning, a Friday morning, and said, hey, mandatory meeting. And then they announced it a little later on, and it was a little shell shock. And to the same likes, we lost one of our friends as well, Dustin Dopirak, same thing. And I feel for him, and as well as the followers of Indiana, Purdue, and Butler that he wrote an awful lot about. So for me, I spent first couple weeks kind of waiting for it to sink in a little bit. It still wasn't real, it felt like. And then now it's kind of been, all right, let's go. We got games hopefully picking up here soon. Let's kind of game plan about what's next. So the number one good news was I was able to get my podcast back, right? Because I had started that 5 years ago, but I'd moved it to the Athletics platform. So it was just there maybe 8 months. So I was glad to at least get that back. And then now kind of restarting and get back in the groove of writing again, because if you don't write, then you lose that feel and that touch a little bit.
So there's a lot obviously going on right now with the NBA and specifically the Pacers. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, and one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on, and I think this is actually the perfect week to do it, is there's a huge, obviously, overlap with Victor Oladipo, who played for Indiana, and the Pacers, him being their all-star player, their star guy. And it just came out last week, and you obviously have, to me, know as much about the situation as anybody from your time covering the team and just being around the Pacers. Victor's not going to play in Orlando. And there is, I think, a wide-ranging reaction to this, depending on who you listen to, who you follow on Twitter. There's people who say he's quit on the team. There's people who say he's doing the right thing. There's opinions in the middle. I want to start out just by asking, how surprised were you at this? Were you surprised at all? And what do you think kind of went into this decision for him to just say, I'm shutting it down, I'm not going to play?
Yeah, so there is a lot here, a lot on the bone to discuss here. First of all, I think the thing I've been trying to stress to Pacer fans really over the last 6 months is that Victor and his people are in full control of everything. And so, for example, they chose a surgeon after the injury. He rehabbed down in Miami. He decided to come back for a playoff game and turned out to just be one. He tried to come back for a couple of them when they were swept against the Celtics. Then he went back down to Miami to rehab for the summer. That's tradition. He's done that for at least the last couple of years now. And then he decided when he would return. He set the date, and the Pacers found out when it was out in the media. And he held his own little press conference a little later on. And then last Friday, the Pacers, of course, were taken a little aback when, before they even knew Victor's intentions of not playing, that then it got not leaked out at all. It was presented and announced, if you will, by Victor intentionally. I thought it was notable that he did it on a Friday afternoon, which we in the business obviously know that's generally your news dump. You're not going to get attention. I don't know if that was strategic or not, or that's just when he was good with that decision. And I'd be lying if I didn't say the Pacers aren't a little bit frustrated by all this. They've been frustrated for more than a year, just about little things, about a lot of details, about the way in which things have gone down in several different scenarios. But there's no doubt right now he remains the face of the team. He's an outspoken leader. The reality is, honestly, and when talking basketball, is that this is a very different situation. There's 9 players on the roster that's going down to Disney that he's barely played any minutes with. He's played just over 320-some minutes this season. So there's actually a lot of unfamiliarity in terms of that locker room because they haven't been together for more than, 6-7 months at all. And during which much of this time he was spent on his own. They would go on a road trip, and this was the right thing to do, but he would go to the Mad Ants and practice with them because he just wanted to get reps in. And then now, as they're trying to rev up again for the restart here, before he even has practiced with the team, because practices aren't even allowed just yet, Alex, he says, no, I'm not good with that. And this is a long-winded answer in saying, I think the biggest concern from him, even though he hasn't said it, is the acknowledgement that he's entering the final year of his contract. He's under contract with the Pacers for one more year, $21 million. And after that, at 29 years old, right now it's an unsure future. So he wants to, or needs to, be able to maximize his earnings moving forward, because this upcoming year, the next summer, will be the largest contract and perhaps his last big one of his career. So I think that is his mindset right now. I can't fault him at that, but it is a little bit annoying, I would say, for many around the team of, is he playing? Is he not? Is he with us? Is he not? Why is he still going with us? Oh, he's going to go down there with no restrictions, but not play. So there's a lot to it.
So yeah, that brings up a ton of different things in my head that we can kind of get to. I think a question, and it, you know, a lot of people that listen to this podcast aren't familiar maybe with the NBA and how contracts work. From a Pacers perspective, there's really nothing that they can do at this point in time, right, to give him more security in the future. We're not in a window now where they could give him an extension. Is that right?
Correct. The weird thing is, technically, usually would be, right? Because it's July and you could agree he would be eligible for a contract extension again. However, I think they basically pushed things off 3 months, right? So let's finish the 3 months we never got to. And so that would make him eligible once again in October. And to be clear, he was also eligible for a contract extension in the fall leading up to the start of the season. And this is a little bit of minutia, but the longer he waits, the more money he's eligible for, right? Because he does take on more risk. Teams take on less. So his contract offered in the fall, a little bit less than if he waited this summer. And the Pacers' hands are essentially tied for this summer, what they can offer him the maximum. And it's not the max contract that players are wanting. What they can offer him is a maximum of $25 million. It's his 21 plus the raises allowed by the collective bargaining agreement. And what he's doing right now, Alex, is waiting ideally till next summer when he would become an unrestricted free agent. So one, you would have bidders. Right now, no other teams can make him offers. Only the Pacers, only on a contract extension. By waiting till next summer, any team can make him an offer. Pacers cannot match it necessarily and definitely retaining him. That's what a restricted free agent is. So by waiting till next summer, he could get a max contract across the league. But what the Pacers do have in their favor is that they would have his bird rights, allowing them to offer him a fifth year on a new deal, whereas any other team could offer no more than 4 years. So I'm curious if that, how much that intrigues him to what at age 33 have another year at $25 to $30 million guaranteed when he's coming off an unusual injury that we still have not seen him at 100%.
The Pacers also have a decision to make in terms of whether or not he's going to be worth that money for that fifth year. And we saw last offseason in the NBA a situation where I don't think Victor will be obviously eligible for the kind of money that Kemba Walker could have gotten from Charlotte. I believe as an all-NBA player, he had access to more money. But there's also an argument for, you know, a smaller market team that, you know, if you kind of tie up all your resources in one guy and doesn't work out necessarily, you're kind of stuck with this contract, right, for 5 years. So the Pacers have a decision to make too. How kind of do you think they're viewing him as a part of their future? Is it something that they're going to be willing to do a longer term deal next offseason? Do you think they kind of still view him as a guy that they have to keep?
Yes, because number one, in Indiana, who are you going to get? Right. Unless you have that player lined up, that's the reality of being in an Indiana or a Charlotte or a Phoenix. Like, you don't have stars. I'm not even talking superstars. You don't even have stars knocking on your door necessarily. And so their current reality is they need to retain them. And at worst, you figure out how to move them. Maybe it costs you a first round pick. But if anything, you need to maximize what you can with what you know, because it's already in your hand, right? So the Pacers have been all in. They're fully transparent with Victor, with his agent, with what they feel about him, and allowing certain things to go on with him. They want him to be part of the future. They're unsure if he wants to be part of their future, quite honestly, right now. I do think they would be comfortable doing the contract extension this summer at that $25 million number. I don't know. I don't think anyone knows right now if he's worth that super. He's not eligible, as you said, for a super max because he was traded and then signed a contract extension after that. I don't think you could honestly say right now he is worth a max contract, just because we don't know if he's going to be 100%. We haven't physically seen it. And I think teams would need to feel comfortable about that. The one thing also that's not in his favor for next summer as much is that there is an entire bed of outstanding superstars that will become free agents. Guys like LeBron, and of course, maybe he'll stay in LA. We don't know that. LeBron, Kawhi, Paul George, etc. A whole list of them. Whereas this summer, and really just comes down to is Victor comfortable with taking an extension now and having that money secured? It'd probably be, you know, over $100 million. So it's a significant number. Let's not downplay this, right? Especially with the current environment, especially when we don't know what the salary cap is going to look like moving forward. What if it goes down $20 million next summer? We just don't know. So I think that's a big decision all teams would have to make. But right now, I think the Pacers, they would be willing to do this contract extension this summer. They would like that, in fact, because they would like some certainty in to plan ahead. Because outside of Victor, they have their core group outside of Justin Holiday locked up for the next couple of years at least. So they really like their core and what they have moving forward.
So the biggest question that I've heard about this topic of him sitting, not playing with the rejoin here, is, all right, he was okay to come back after he did his rehab, took his time coming back, came back this season. You said he played 320 minutes or something. I don't know exactly how many games that was. I don't follow it on a day-to-day.
Just 13 games.
Okay, so he played at some point this season. Everything got shut down. It's my understanding at that point in time, he was still playing. He was healthy. What, I guess, is the difference from his standpoint, or from what kind of you can gather of playing then as opposed to playing now? Is it just a long layoff and being able to ramp up and the risk of injury? What's I guess the sticking point for him to not play? Because as I understand it, he's still going to go to Orlando. He's not one of the guys who has opted out and said, I'm not playing due to COVID reasons and won't get his check. He's still going to get paid. He's just going there as a spectator, yeah, and he's still going to get his paycheck and not playing. And I think that probably has rubbed some people the wrong way.
Yeah, and once again, there's a lot of layers to this. So you hit on it completely. For one, one of his biggest concerns is after a long layoff like this, you're more susceptible to soft tissue injuries, and especially a guy like him that's coming off an injury and still not 100%. So that's number one, one of his concerns. Secondly, let's look back at his timeline. He started playing against competition again in early November, meaning one-on-one, revving up to 3-on-3, and then in December, some 5-on-5, and then another month. So he essentially took 3 months from not playing to let's play again, even while having his minutes slashed a little bit and being minimized and watched closely to about, I think it was 24 minutes at the time, even though he still said, I felt great, I could have played more. You got to be cautious with it. So now you do have plenty of time, if we're being honest here. You'd have, they'll start practicing. The Pacers fly to Orlando on Thursday morning. The team will then take a couple of days to quarantine, which is mandatory, 36 to 48 hours. Then they'll start revving up the process a little bit, including practice. As of now, no teams have even practiced in groups. It's just been one with two coaches. And his concern there also is that I haven't played against competition. So not only am I more susceptible to injuries, but I want to rev up much like I did coming off the injury in the first place. And while he would have about at least 3 weeks before the first seeding games is what they're calling the finish to the regular season, he would have at least a month if he wanted to rev up to these postseason games. And so ultimately it's just a tough call for him. Is it worth it? I think honestly in the back of everybody's mind, probably when you're having an injury, is what we saw with Kevin Durant, right? Suffered an injury. I don't know if we can say rush back because he admitted he was good to play. But that's the type of thing, if I'm a player like that, that goes through your mind. Is it worth it? Especially as we all have the understanding, the Pacers are not a contending team this year, right? They might make some noise, and I think they would have been a threat to probably at least go into the second round, but they're not going to win a title this year unless they're the only team healthy. So that's the other thing. And then the third thing in all this is just that dangling carrot of I need contract, that new contract that I don't have locked up just yet, and I don't want to do anything that would impede what I could potentially maximize my earnings here.
So you mentioned the Pacers not having much control over what he's doing. It's more all, and this is a players' league. Let's make no mistake about that. This is, and in many ways, I think a lot of people agree with it being that way. The superstars are who puts people in the seats. They're who drives the TV ratings. They're who, you know, that's why the league is worth what it is now. Isn't, you mentioned just kind of the, maybe a little bit of frustration on the Pacers part. I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but just kind of the unknown of what's going to happen with the situation moving forward. Isn't this just kind of the price of doing business when you're dealing with all-stars in the NBA at this point? You're not going to have the control that maybe you had in a previous era, a previous generation. I mean, looking back to the Last Dance that we watched, you know, all of us watched in quarantine the last couple of months, to see how different it was in terms of player empowerment then as opposed to it is now. This is basically something the Pacers just have to live with, right? They don't really have any recourse and to have any control over the situation, especially as a small market team. It's not like they can say, all right, well, we'll just trade you and we're going to go out and get DeMar DeRozan or another superstar, because that's just not how it's going to work for them.
The only thing in my mind that they could do, but this would be a dumb decision, is to say, hey, you're not playing, you stay on back, and because you're forfeiting playing, because you're just not comfortable, we're not going to pay you the remaining of your salary. So that would cost him something like $3 million. Well, if you do that, you might as well open the door. You might as well open the door for him and say, go ahead, walk right through, and we're not going to get any value for him as well. So as long as you can, there's no reason to burn any bridge or anything like that. Although in fairness, I do question a little bit the fact that the Pacers are going to take Victor. They're going to take Jeremy Lamb, who's also suffered a significant injury and probably won't play basketball on an NBA level for at least 6 months. So my understanding here is you have your entire medical team down there. We want to help and contribute to the rehab as much as we can and know they're getting great treatment, so we want them with them. On top of that, it's a team, and we want to do that. But at the same time, part of me wonders, look, this is an unusual circumstance. This is going to be more tests, more meals, more hotels, and one more body to be concerned with, throwing them into that bubble. So that thing I do a little bit question. But no, you're exactly right, Alex. I mean, as we're talking today, it's 10 years of the decision, LeBron's decision, and that I think kind of signifies the start of more player empowerment, more player movement, and more player power, if you will. and it's not necessarily a bad thing. These guys do so much for the league. I think the detriment for teams is what you said in terms of the uncertainty, and they want to be clued in here. I thought it was notable, right, how Victor announced that he wouldn't play through a media source, whereas the Wizards go through, or excuse me, Bradley Beal and the Wizards together issue a press release. Those are two very different styles to say the same message.
So the bubble is something that we've texted about. we have different, obviously different opinions on it. I hope it works. I think it's a great idea if it's executed as kind of everybody thinks.
You're a Disney guy, right? I think I remember from your tweets.
Yeah, I'm a Disney guy. I actually think for them it's a smart thing because they don't have anybody coming down there right now, and they're getting a ton of money from the NBA. I think Brian Windhorst said $1.5 million a day or something to put this thing together. So they need the money, and obviously the NBA needed a spot to go. I'm just curious.
And we should keep in mind ABC, Disney, who owns ABC's, their biggest partner, along with TNT. So this is a true partnership. So that's also why it makes a ton of sense for both sides.
They need this to work because they need the inventory for TV, right? How much longer can ESPN keep showing whatever the foreign baseball league that they've been showing for, you know, months on months in the morning? They need the inventory. And I think everybody's kind of, you know, crossing their fingers.
We're ready.
And hoping, we want to watch basketball, right? We haven't watched it in months, but what sense have you gotten? I mean, I know you've told me that you are doing, I guess, Zoom interviews and such with the Pacers players and staff and talking to different people. What sense do you get from talking to players and coaches on their comfort level of in terms of how this thing is set up? Is there any reservations about guys going? Are they comfortable with it? Do they just want to play? I mean, what, just in general terms, what's the sense of comfort that you're getting when you talk to people about this whole setup?
I would say it's getting there for them, if that makes sense. We were talking today. You're exactly right. We have Zoom interviews. So today we talked to Doug McDermott and Coach Nate McMillan about certain things. And I know last night Twitter had NBA Twitter, clearly bored, had a good time making fun of kind of the food that was presented. The reality is that's just for the first 2 days. They have unlimited options, essentially. There's an app where they can go on and order food to their room eventually. But for the first 2 days, they have to be very tight. You can't leave your room except when you're designated to be tested, because they are tested every single day. Part of it, to me, almost feels a little college feel to it, right? Where your things are very by a book. There's a schedule. You're assigned a room. Those certain things. You're not with anyone. You can't have family members. If you have a kid, for a player like Justin Holiday, this really hit home in the fact that he's had the best 3 months. These last 3 months, in terms of he just had a kid, his second daughter. And so he's had the opportunity to spend every single day with her. On the other side of that, he's about to leave her for that same amount of time, right when she's born. And you have kids, you know better than I what that is like. So the next 3 months, he'll have to be away from her. So that's incredibly difficult. And the other thing here, Alex, and when we keep bringing up basketball, we're asking a lot of those questions. And the reality is they keep coming back to, well, we don't know what this is going to be like. No one has experienced this before. So that's something that's interesting in terms of, you know, what's it like without fans in the stands? What's it like not having to travel? How does your body feel better or different, right? You know, just not having the freedoms to do what you want necessarily in your free time. And then I think, and this is going to be something I'll write about, is a lot of it comes down to your mental health and having to quarantine essentially once again. Now they'll have options like golfing and swimming and hanging out, playing cards. But mostly I'm expecting a lot of them, especially those like LeBron on title contending teams. I'm honestly expecting them to say, hey, look, this isn't camp. This is business. If you don't have to stay in your room, because I want to win a title here, like, let's not mess around here. And then they'll follow his lead. And on the other side of that, Alex, I'm curious, what about a team like Phoenix or the Wizards, who have, it feels like, 6 or 8 guys playing, staying at home because of injuries or other circumstances? They have no hope for the playoffs. Are they going to take it easy and potentially expose the bubble? Meaning, you know, will they take it lightly, or will they try to sneak someone in, or, you know, just not follow the rules to a T exactly? I don't know. But those are all things everyone's worried about. And last night, what I was getting back to was about the food situation. Nate McMillan was joking today how that was the talk around the facility. Do we need to take more snacks? And it's like, no, calm down. You're going to have gourmet chefs down there. Just give it 2 days, okay?
Yeah. So in terms of the bubble, one of the more entertaining rants that I saw in the last week, I think it was last week or the week before, Stephen A, who, you know, to me, one of the more entertaining men in sports. I just love listening to
that's
his
one
rants,
way
by
to
the
put
way.
It. Are yeah. you serious or not?
No, some of
I'm
his
the
stuff,
opposite.
Really?
He's automatic turn off for me. Don't care.
Man. So anyway, he was basically laughing at the notion that the bubble is going to be have any integrity. Where do you come down on, you know, you mentioned teams like Phoenix and Brooklyn. I mean, Brooklyn's best player going into this is Caris LeVert. So that kind of tells you he's a good player, but he's not a, you know, a leader of a team that's going to do anything in this situation. Do you think it's going to be, do you think the integrity of the bubble is going to be something that's going to be a problem for the NBA? And what do you think their plan is to kind of, you know, say they do have some tests. What's going to happen at that point? Some positives.
So are you talking in terms of, you know, guys test positive or like,
no, I'm
guys
talking
are
about
bending
like
the
what
rules
if,
trying
you know,
to sneak out.
Yeah. That type of thing.
I don't, just because they're very limited in the number of people that are down there. I think they I hope they understand the severity of both where they are, the implications it would have for the league, their future contracts and all this, because that's why we're going back. We're not going back so they can crown a winner necessarily. I think that's important and they'll get to that. But the reality is it's because they need over $1 billion to come in, both for the players and then the owners and the teams. I mean, there are teams right now that while, yes, the franchise is worth billions, individually maybe that owner or that team is struggling. I've seen other teams have to lay off employees. Some have gone on furloughs. Part-timers are limited to a certain amount of hours. So that money component is absolutely critical in all this. The thing I wonder, and I suspect will happen, is after the first month, once you get those teams that have there's no reason why they're there. This is my opinion, but there's no reason why there's more than 16 teams in this bubble other than money, because the Wizards have no chance. Phoenix has no chance. Those
Brooklyn.
Sorts of things. Brooklyn, absolutely. Not right now. Not at all. Let's limit to what we could. If anything, you could have convinced me to tighten the window to, say, 14 teams. Ultimately, we just need to get through this and move on is how I view it. And one of the key reasons to get through this season is because we don't know about next season. Will it happen? What will it look like? Will it be in front of fans? Because if it's not, that's also a significant portion of revenue that directly impacts the 50-50 split between the teams and the players as well. So they're incentivized just as much as the teams. I suspect there absolutely will be some positive tests, but to me, it seems like the NBA is doing everything within their power. They're fencing properties. You can't go out without being tested or being approved upon entry or being quarantined for 4 more days upon entry and certain things like that. Right now, Malcolm Brogdon has to clear a couple more tests after he tested positive 2 weeks ago before he can even join the team on the plane down to Orlando. If not, he'll have to travel separately. So it seems like in an unusual situation that nobody has planned for, they're doing just fine. But I think a certain amount of tests are expected. And the other thing I was getting back at the beginning is I think after a month, if things are going well, maybe we'll see them loosen up a few things, meaning maybe you can bring one person, or maybe teams, for example, can bring a coach and a second PR person or things like that. Once you get rid of those teams that have no chance, you can bring new people into the bubble who could positively influence what you're trying to do. Maybe more media is allowed in. I don't know. Right now, there's a limit to 10 and is a significant cost. That is probably not worth it unless you're ESPN and TNT, quite honestly.
So last thing on Oladipo, and then I want to get into some IU talk because I'm always interested for your takes on that as well. But
yeah,
on Oladipo, there's been, you know, you search his name on Twitter and you see Oladipo Miami. He's going to Miami. This is why he's doing this. Mm-hmm. What in your eyes is the kind of the probability, I guess, that he's not with the Pacers after next season? Is that a legit possibility? And do you think there's anything to the rumors of him preferring to go somewhere like that? I mean, you mentioned before we started recording that he I think lives there in the off season, maybe, or does some workouts and stuff there. That's where he had his surgery. I mean, is there anything to that in your mind?
Yeah, so when Vic's on his own time here the last couple summers, he spent it in Miami, has a place down there. In fact, he owns a gym down there. And so that's where videos came out of him being in a half-court type-looking gym inside during the summer. That's his. It's Victor Oladipo Skills Lounge, in fact, is what I think he calls it. That's kind of his headquarters. That's where him and his manager and such live down there. He has his own personal physical therapist, so it doesn't matter where he is. The interesting thing to me, Alex, too, in all this is, for example, when he started playing again this year, the physical therapist was not on the team plane. Sometimes you make exceptions, sometimes you do not. He was traveling commercially, just like I was, and all of that. And I think it's just a fine line with teams. For example, a very different way to go about things is Boston. Brad Stevens loves family, encourages it, in fact. So to bring it back local, if Gordon Hayward, his wife, or any of the girls say, want to join him on a trip, they're all welcome. It's almost encouraged because they want them to be comfortable at home and make things easier. So it's just a different style in all this. Absolutely, Miami would absolutely love to have him down there and have him join in. I think, number one, he wants to make the most out of what he can out of a contract, especially after suffering a ruptured quad tendon, because that just does not happen with players. It happened to Charles Barkley and Tony Parker, but that's about it. This usually occurs in people that are 40 and older and such. So it's still, to this point, it's still very concerning, and it's something you have to be aware of. The other thing is, I think there's been a lot of people in his ear about trying to move on, and Miami being one of the obvious destinations down there, playing for Pat Riley. Remember, Dwayne Wade probably still calls him a mentor. They first met at the White House randomly, and then, of course, after that, Tom Crean and that whole connection with IU, and they still remain in touch and everything, and he's been able to see what Dwayne's done with his brand. Has wine, he has, you know, socks, all kinds of things, and I think a lot of that is encouraging to him as well. I think the possibility of what you can do in Miami a little bit. It's more of the entertainment, because he's a big singer. He likes to perform. We saw that at IU, right? With their ESPYs. I forget what the student showcase or whatever they used to do. Couldn't have one this year. But things like that, Victor shines. We know when the light's on, something turns on within him. So it would not surprise me that him, or at least people close to him, are considering other situations. The thing I keep stressing, not to him directly, but to others, is he's got to be careful what he wishes for too, because there's no fan base, there's no state that is going to appreciate or embrace him, or as I always like to say, hug him back. Because to take it back to the Pacers, Pacers wanted a hug from Paul George. He deflected that, said you aren't good enough, is how fans took it. This state, this city, this team's not good enough. It would be heartbreaking, I think, if they had to feel that once again, especially to quote-unquote one of their own. He calls Indianapolis and IU fans essentially kind of his second home, his second family. They were the team. They were the first Indiana team, NBA team, Alex, that has believed in him. Orlando tried him at point guard. He's not a point guard. OKC, he kind of played second fiddle and learned some under Russell Westbrook. But then was expendable. He came to the Pacers and his confidence skyrocketed. I thought his confidence was very much at a deficit when he arrived, and now it's through the roof. Ultra confident, walks with that ultimate confidence in everything he does. But yeah, it's gonna be a big decision for him. What does he want to get out of this? Right? How much do you want to win?
He's also not the man anywhere else, right? I mean, are the Pacers the only team he could be on where he's the clear centerpiece?
I think there's a few smaller markets. I mean, if he was in Charlotte right now,
yeah, but
probably, but to a much lesser degree, absolutely.
Right. I mean, my whole thing is, you mentioned Miami and obviously in terms of lifestyle, probably a huge upgrade over living in Indianapolis. Right. But in terms of marketing and kind of where you can kind of build a legacy for yourself, I don't know that there's any market in the NBA where he's more valuable from that perspective than with the Pacers. because say if he goes to Miami, he's not the clear superstar. They already have Jimmy Butler. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned if he goes anywhere else, it's moves up in market. I just don't see any team where he's going to be the clear-cut superstar. So that's from my perspective, and obviously for selfish reasons, I like to see him stay in Indiana because I think it's great that he makes it down to IU games and is still involved with the program. I'm sure regardless of what happens, he's always going to be welcomed to IU. IU fans are going to love him. But I think it, in a lot of ways...
Bit sour though, right? People would sour on him a little bit because, hey, we're not good enough. We offered. We gave you all you wanted when you... We're still looking to earn a rotation spot in this league to become a decent player, and now you're an all NBA guy because of us, right?
Especially because he was looked at as somewhat of a hero after what they went through with Paul George. Like Paul mm-hmm. George kind of cast him to the side and said, "You're not good enough," and like, "All right, well, we'll go get this guy." And now we're better off with this guy than we were with Paul George, right? We got Sabonis, we got Oladipo, and that trade worked out for us. And then to have him kind of blossom into an all-star under their wings and then ultimately leave, I think there'd be some people that would turn on. But ultimately, I think from an IU perspective, fans are going to love him regardless for what he did to the program. And I want to get into IU for a minute. Before you went to The Athletic, you helped with Kent Sterling's show. And so you heard his show every day. You heard IU fans mm-hmm. call, you know, whatever, who. I don't know if he took calls, but he talked about IU all the time. And Kent is obviously one of the more opinionated guys in the Indianapolis market. I'm curious from your perspective, just the last three seasons under Archie Miller, what, as an IU fan and somebody who's also in the media, what's been your sense of the progress that Archie's made? Do you feel like things are going in the right direction? Do you have any consternation on the direction of the program in terms of what you've seen on the court?
Yeah, and I heard you talk with Jeff Goodman about this last week, and I thought he put it well. Steady uphill. They're working towards it. I honestly thought it'd be a little bit faster. I was encouraged early on with what Chris Holtmann, for example, did at Ohio State so soon. Along the other lines there, I mean, he's been true to his word, meaning he's locked down the borders. He continues to get the elite talent within the state. All that has been great. And I also appreciate his no BS mentality as well in all this, right? He is who he is, and he's not going to apologize for it. But I think we all did expect more, right? I think out of individuals and out of the program as a whole. We should not, as Indiana, we should not be questioning whether they're going to the tournament. That shouldn't even be assumed. It should be a given. And I don't think they're there just yet.
In terms of the guys who have come through IU that are currently in the NBA that you've had a chance to see play, maybe some of the younger guys, Romeo, is there anyone that you're looking at that has a chance to have maybe kind of a breakout season in the next few years or something? I mean, it seems like to me, Yogi and Vonleh are kind of, I don't want to say holding on, but you know, they're maybe at the back end of their careers, but they do have some younger guys with Romeo. And I think Juwan Morgan even got a chance. Of any of those young guys that are kind of in the league right now, do you see any of them having long sustained careers, or is there anyone that you're intrigued to see kind of how they develop?
Yeah, I think Romeo will. Keep in mind, he's what, 19. And so
yeah.
Much of these guys, I don't even read into them until they've been in the league 3 years. I mean, keep in mind, here locally, Paul George was nothing really his first year, and now he's an all NBA type talent. He had to earn his way on the court to play defense under Jim O'Brien. He was not a great player just yet. So for those that are like, look, Romeo hadn't done anything for a good Boston team, I told you, no. Take a step back. He's actually in an excellent situation, both with coaching, and they have their main red clause, which is right there, which I think is incredibly helpful. To me, this year for him was about staying healthy and just getting reps, whether it was in the NBA or anywhere. I wanted to see him sustain some opportunities on the court, both in practice and in games without, well, he tweaked his thumb, well, he sprained his calf, well, he rolled his ankle, he's out 2 weeks. For me, that should have been his focus for this year. Noah's I think made a solid career out of what he was. That's what I think about with him. Yogi will be interesting this summer. He's going to be a free agent, and he's getting to a point as a second, third point guard that teams might look to take a chance on another guy. And they might, a guy that would be half the cost, right? Because I think right now he's probably getting, I think, almost $2 million, up to $3 million per year. Okay. And if I could get
a guy 2 years out of college or still on a rookie deal and pay him $1.5 million. Maybe I'm going to roll with that and choose his upside. Whereas right now, I think we know exactly what Yogi is, and he's an NBA rotation guy. Nothing more. And that's fine. That's an outstanding career, obviously. I really continue to like, obviously I'm biased here. I love what Eric Gordon, outside of his injuries this year, what he has been able to do. He just signed a big contract before the year. He's on a winning team. He knows his role. And I'm intrigued to see what he and the Rockets can do this postseason and see if they can make a push at it. Even though I don't think they have much of a chance, I think they're all in all the time with Daryl Morey. So I think that's always interesting.
Two other guys I think you've seen quite a bit because they're in the Eastern Conference. Thomas Bryant, who got, I think, $25 million this last offseason for 3 years, which is, for a guy that gets picked 42nd to be making, I think this is his fourth season in the NBA, I believe. Yeah. Third or fourth, one of those. He's making $8 million a year. OG has also been, I think Thomas Bryant's actually making more than OG because Thomas Bryant was a free agent sooner, I guess, because of his rookie contract.
He got waived too by the Lakers. I think that's why. And so then he had to sign a new contract.
So what have been your impressions of OG and Bryant? I mean, I think a lot of people are excited about OG just in terms of his long-term potential as a kind of a 3-and-D guy. And obviously with Kawhi moving on, it's given him a little bit more of an opportunity to take on a bigger role there in Toronto.
Yeah. I left OG out of the conversation because I thought that was kind of assumed. We know, like, this is really exciting what he could become and has already become a great player on a championship team, even though he wasn't really part of that due to injury as much last season. I mean, you got to love his upside with what he's going to be able to contribute. Play both ends of the floor. He doesn't talk much. That's a detriment for me and you. I remember, I think it was his rookie season, he came to Bankers Life Fieldhouse and I requested him through Toronto PR and they're like, sure, yeah, absolutely. Good luck. I go, yeah, I know. So I went over there and I forget the number, but Alex, I asked him probably 8 questions and our interview was over in about 62 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, there's not much there, but I'm really encouraged by what he continues to do. He's still very young. And then Thomas Bryant's been a really interesting case. You're right, because he's a guy who they really didn't believe in him or give him much of a chance out west and with the Lakers. And I'm pretty sure that he was just a casualty of acquiring someone else. I forget the exact deal. And so they had to cut bait from a contract and he was waived. And so the Wizards then picked him up and he's been starting. He's been playing over Jan Mahimi at times. It seems like he's working his way to an 8 to 10 year solid NBA career. I mean, if you're earning $8 million per year, you're doing just fine.
The last guy I wanted to ask you about before we wrap is Cody Zeller, because he was kind of in that same boat with Victor where he got the rookie contract extension. He's obviously making a little bit less, I think $15 million. He's got one more year left on his deal. Do you think he's looking at a situation where he's going to have to kind of settle into more of a, you know, $7, $8 million a year deal going forward? Is he, in your eyes, just more or less a rotation player moving forward, which is nothing wrong with that, but I don't know that he's going to warrant another deal where he's making 15 a year.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. Selfishly, I'd love to see him get in a new situation. I would love to see him get outside of Charlotte, move to a different team and
a
get
playoff
going
team because where he can be like a seventh or eighth man. I think he'd be perfect.
Yeah, but it's more specifically, it's more of an indictment on Charlotte and how they're not doing anything under Michael Jordan. How a guy like Kemba Walker, who loved the Charlotte team, playing for them in that community and all that, wanted out to go contend for something. It feels like I can't remember the last time they were in the playoffs, right? Like
they were in the playoffs a couple of years ago, but they got beat pretty easily in the first round.
Yeah, maybe it was to the Brooklyn Nets. I don't know. Either way, there's just nothing exciting about the Charlotte Hornets at all. So I would like to see him personally move on. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him pick his situation much more than value the money. And I think the same could probably be said upcoming for Gordon Hayward, who has a player option this summer. That'll be a tough decision. Relatively. I mean, it's like $30 million. So, I mean,
he's got to take that, right? He's not getting 30 somewhere else, right?
Depends, because next summer you got all kinds of people that are free agents.
So if he's going to opt out, if he thinks he can go get like 55 somewhere else, maybe
the goal would be, one consideration would be to sign a 4 or 5 year deal, or it'd be to go elsewhere and sign a 4 year deal elsewhere and get security through all this, right? Because we also don't know what the salary cap net is next year. And so if you wait till next year, when there's a lot of free agents, when money is dried up, when maybe there's some kind of amnesty clause, or like, we don't know what it's going to be next summer. Maybe he'd consider, he'd want assurances now. Not saying he does, but that's something, if I'm him, I'm having that conversation right now, because your only competition in all this is Anthony Davis for one, and he's probably going to re-sign with the Lakers. I don't know why he wouldn't. So that's something to keep in mind. So if, to go back to your point, if I'm Cody, I'm probably looking for a 3 or 4 year deal, valuing my situation and maximizing my time in the league much more than another million or two per year, I think.
Especially when he's already made 60 or 70 and he seems like the guy that's probably
he's got admittedly all 60 the or cheapest 70. Guys.
He's, yeah, the cheapest he's still guy, driving apparently. His Dodge Charger. Yeah. He's also one of the more accessible NBA guys. I mean, he's just like, in terms of being willing to do interviews and stuff. I mean, I remember when the quarantine started, it was every day he was doing something. So that was,
he did awesome. That IG live going around. I forget whether it was his parents or his brother's house and they were rebuilding it. And
he was on Levitard show a lot too.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah. So what are your plans for the season restarting? Where can people read your work? What's kind of next for you? I know I've kind of been prodding you via text and no, Twitter asking you support, what's man. Next. I think you do. I think, all right, if you're a Pacers fan, this is my opinion, but hopefully you respect my opinion if you're listening to this show, especially at this point, almost an hour in. But, you know, nobody has covered the Pacers as well as Scott has. Going back to when you were with Pacers.com, when you had your own thing with Vigilant Sports, then to when you went to The Athletic, I mean, you've done, I think, a tremendous job, and I've been kind of proud to support your work, and I know we've known each other a long time now, and there's a mutual respect between us, but, you know, I want to see you continue to do great things. What are you thinking about in terms of kind of what's going to be next? I mean, there's obviously an opportunity here with the season restarting for you to do some coverage. What do you kind of envision the rest of the season looking like from a Scott Agnes coverage perspective?
I appreciate that. And you know what I think about you and your site. It's kind of the standard for independent journalism, which I think is outstanding.
Thanks.
In all this, hold on. Sorry, screw this up. Oh, it's no big deal. Sorry.
Do you have breaking news?
I thought so. I saw a press release, Pacer Sports and Entertainment pursues.
Oh.
And I go, ooh, and then health and safety. A situation here. Gotcha. Yeah, this has been a challenging situation, no doubt. Mainly, honestly, because what media companies are hiring or are able to hire at this point. Just because so far, we haven't really had many sports. Meaning you don't need coverage and you're not sending people on the road and you don't need those reports and certain things. On top of that, you're having even more journalists unemployed, meaning they have more people to pick through. So kind of my mindset in all this is, one, let's just keep doing what I've been doing. Let's finish out the season. Let's see where we're at after that. Ultimately, because I've been around Banker's Life and the Pacers since 2003. So at this point, it kind of comes secondhand. If there's anything I have a question about, there's probably someone I can call at the field house that I've known for 10 plus years in all of this. So yeah, it's a little discouraging, obviously, what's gone on, both personally and in the world, obviously. But I continue to do my podcast, Fieldhouse Files, on all major platforms. I love podcasting. I love this. Whether it's yours or mine, what have you. It's just fun. Just like we're talking, and I haven't seen you in 3 months, so that's awesome. And then I'll continue writing. Where exactly, I'm not sure. You can find it for now at vigilantsports.com, but I'm certainly considering other options. To be blunt, I need money. I need an income. So I've gone back and forth in this current climate. Is there enough people willing and able, quite honestly, to fork over a little money per month to have my coverage? That's what it comes down to. I'd like it, but I also understand.
I hope so.
I also understand people are probably pulling back on their whatever it is, ESPN Plus subscription or Disney Plus. I don't know.
Well, Scott, we wish you the best of luck. We obviously, as I said, support and value your work tremendously. Hopefully, whatever you choose to do next, I know it'll be successful. So keep, and I appreciate the fact that, you know, you've always got a positive outlook. You know, I don't know that I could say the same for myself if I had kind of gone.
You got to, man. What's the point of living any other way, though? You know,
exactly. It's been, I think, for a lot of people in our industry, and that's the thing. Like, we don't want to talk about that because we know it's everybody, right? We're all going through the same situation. There's different challenges that we've had in terms of my website. I talked a little bit about, you know, before we started recording, the challenges we've had. It's just, you know, it's a hard time to get people's attention. There's so much going on in the world. There's so much uncertainty, and you know, I appreciate just kind of your positive outlook on it. You know, I think if more people were able to do that, it's definitely kind of the right way to go with things.
The other thing is the thing we're all dealing with, whether it is content or not, the fight for eyeballs, right? Because people aren't at work. They're not listening on their ride to work or their train commute to the office, or they're bored at work and reading. So even if you do produce content, there's less people reading just in general, because they're with their kids or they're turning off all media because they want to drown it out. I don't know. It's just tough all around, and we want to see this business succeed, but it takes everyone to support it. That's why, well, even though I was laid off by The Athletic, I had people DM me or tweet me and say, hey, yeah, I'm ending my subscription. I'm like, no, do the opposite. In fact, support another institution as well, or become a premium member with you guys or somewhere else, because we can all use little funds, whether it's $1 or $5 a month. So.
Absolutely. Well, follow his work on Twitter for now, Scott Agnes. We appreciate the time, and I'll be looking forward to your Pacers coverage here when the season restarts. Really looking forward to having some live basketball to watch. You know, as fun as the TBT here is to turn on, I'm looking forward to watching some NBA. So thanks for joining us. Thanks for the time, and we'll be back next week with another edition of Podcast on the Brink.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. Remember to join me and my co-hosts for more IU basketball talk at assemblycall.com, and visit Alex over at insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana basketball. If you want to support Podcast on the Brink, here is the single best way to do it. Tell anyone you know who loves IU hoops about us and suggest that they subscribe. Podcast on the Brink can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else podcasts are available. Tell your social media followers, email your friends, text your family members. For weekly discussion about IU basketball, they need to be subscribed to Podcast on the Brink. We'll talk to you next time. Go Hoosiers.